You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Bruce Cameron along here in our DFW Studio Northwest version with Sherrod Ellis. How's it going, Neil?
It's going pretty good. How are you guys?
Oh, so far so good.
Doing well. Been a real rainy week, but we need the rain because we won't get it again until November. So,
well, this is like week three of the monsoon.
Feeling like I'm in
week
Seattle.
Three.
Yeah. So.
Except our stores are open.
Our stores are open. And our police are policing.
And we still have windows. Windows are still intact downtown.
We've got plenty of plywood at Home Depot.
Hey, I went to Seattle a couple months ago. Well, now it's been 6 months. Yikes. But the restaurants were, they had like, I think 25% of the staff along with 25% capacity, but it doesn't level out. So it was a nightmare. Anyways.
Well, I thought we'd talk about today coaching and or mentoring youth clients. All of us, the three of us, have our fair share of youth clients on deck. And, you know, we've been talking about people overstaying their welcome and treatment and some of the things more geared toward adults. I thought today we'd talk about adolescents and kind of, you know, go into that discussion.
Hey, kids have been known to overstay their welcome as well.
They have. Oh, for sure. Make no mistake about it. That's probably... We'll have to do a show on
included.
Yeah.
I did.
My inner child wasn't welcome in treatment in the 80s.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, it was nice. Okay, so let's walk through one together. Sherrod and I'll probably take this one, start this one going. Nice case, the individual 17-year-old male comes in for counseling, post-rehab for not just for aftercare, but for a lot of things. I then, did a good bit of counseling, assist with the discharge plan from the facility, re-engaged, got this young man acclimated back into society. We talked about that a little bit, with transitional stuff and re-entry. But this was re-entry from an institution. So we're going right along. But as in the capacity as a counselor, did a lot of great work, man. Pleased as could be with what I've done. And again, I'm not tooting my own horn, but from where we were. Oh, and I got psych assessment, a fresh set of psych assessment testing. Parents were like, well, we got them tested like 4 or 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, man, on a 17-year-old is like, can't even compare it. So anyway, or even 2 years, honestly, 2 years with a 17-year-old.
That's so much happens in such a short amount of time.
That's good data, So anyway, so we got fresh testing. Testing revealed some things, but it also revealed some things where the young man needs to be accountable and, for his choices and not unnecessarily use other diagnoses for reasons for not doing what he needs to be doing. That said, okay, so I felt that he and Sherrod might be able to work together because Sherrod can go into the home. Sherrod can see the young man. Not only that, there's two other siblings involved, parents, both biological parents involved. So everybody has kind of has their own fish on the line here. And again, As a counselor, there's only so much I can do with office visits. Sure, I could schedule them for 5 hours a week or whatever, but even then, that's probably not being the best steward of the resources. Long story short, bring in Sherrod, and in good fashion, we have one of the counseling appointments. Sherrod and I and the parent, you know, we all have a group session together as a way of kind of, you know, introductions and stuff like that. And one of the things that I will say to therapists who are making a referral like that, now again, he's not leaving me. I'm still seeing him to the same degree, and I even said that to him, but I think there was a fear that he was losing me. Right? So if you're a therapist out there, you're making a referral to a coach or a recovery coach or mentor or whatever, and you're going to continue to see that person, please say that up front and be very, very clear about it, and even 200 or 300% clear, because I think even Sherrod had to make sure that he understood he was still going to see me at the regular frequency. It's just that now Sherrod is an add-on. He does more. He can do other things than what I'm doing. So go ahead and pick it up from there in terms of your assessment and the things that you'll be doing with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to rehash that, the importance of being able to make sure that it's communicated clearly to the family as well as to the client that, you know, he was in fear, that he thought that I was taking over.
So kind of you wanted to make sure they didn't feel like he was being passed off, handed off.
Absolutely. So what I explained to him was the continuity of care. Bruce is just seeing the fact that he's reached his limit as far as being able to stick with you with the therapy side. However, he sees that you need some more development. And so he saw the need to bring someone else on to just kind of complement his services and to support his services. So I met with a young man and his family in their home and discussed some of the things that I would be doing and made sure that I let him know that what I'm doing with you is definitely separated from what you and Bruce are doing. You guys will continue with that. I'll be working with you on developing life skills, you know, being able to, you know, like you say, reacclimate and get re-familiar with going back to school in a normal, traditional school setting. And working with him in those areas of thinking and elevating his awareness and communication with his family, working on his the way that he views his family. I mean, that's also a big one. I think that's something that's very unique with this young man. You know, he has a very distorted view of his
family. Reality says way different than what he says. Or actuality.
When I'll ask you, Neil, like when you were using or super, super early in recovery, or when you were just still, did you have a different opinion of your brother than you do now?
You know, a little bit, but and you're asking because of the law enforcement, right?
Okay, yeah.
for the viewers, my brother is. One of my closest friends is a detective, and he's been in law enforcement for some years. And yeah, it was a little bit different, but we knew each other, and I knew him well enough to know that the person he is. Not everybody, not all families are as close as my brother and I are, and we've been real close friends. So, but yeah, a little bit to answer your question in short.
Right. And so, to kind of bring it in, so this client of his has a certain type of distortions with his brother, a certain types of distortions with his sister. And so each person in the family.
Are they older siblings?
One is younger, one is older.
Sister's oldest.
Yeah. So, that's just a lot of work. That I know that Sherrod's going to be doing, you know, as he starts to kind of see him and work on, you know, the relationship with each individual member of the family. And of course, the ongoing relationship with the parents. So, yeah.
You said he's 17, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know everything at 17, or at 17, you know everything. Mm-hmm. And everybody's out to get you at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then I remember when I was at 17 years old, you're in this transitionary period where people are talking about who you're becoming. It's always like a tone of conversation. People are always talking about you like you're, it's sometimes it feels like you're the family pet. And they're talking about, because they'll do it right in front of you, and they're like, yeah, you know, he's becoming such a good guy, and I really like what's happened, and they're looking at you, and you're like, this is weird. And so you're evolving into this person, people are commentating, and then you're being compared a lot of times to your older or younger sibling. And I don't think they always mean to do it, but it's a fact. And if you're in a spot like this young man, and like I was, things don't look good, and you see people compensating with their comments about your personality. Well, you know, he's just naturally gifted at, you know, getting along with people. It's like, yeah, it's a nice way of saying I haven't done much yet. Thank you. But yeah, so I...
Or better yet, the family pictures that you're not in because you were in a facility...
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks, man. It's real, though. No, it's real.
It is. It is, man.
And that presents a challenge itself, you know, as far as for the parents, you know, being able to not make that, like you say, not make that person feel like I'm the cop. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the biggest challenges. A very articulate man, though. I mean, a young man can articulate his opinions, express himself very well spoken. It's just getting him to kind of differentiate between reality and actuality, you know, how you're perceiving things to be and how things really are. And so that's the area that I will work with him on.
I really struggled at that time. I was so busy comparing myself to my siblings and other people my age that I wasn't taking any time to really get to know myself. And so here I am trying to be who I am, and but at the same time I don't know who I am because I'm so focused on all these other people and trying to measure up, and so I'm so busy trying to mimic other people that is when I started to become someone I wasn't, and I spent the next 10 years trying to be somebody I'm not. And I think it initially began at that time in my life where I was comparing myself to everybody except for me. And he's really fortunate to have you around to help him through that, because it's really easy to get lost in it. And I got lost in it. It's nobody else's fault. It's, you know, those are my decisions. But having someone like Sherrod right alongside to kind of usher him through that's going to make a big difference. I don't want to say usher, but you know what I mean, coach through that. So those are a lot of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all both have siblings, don't you?
Absolutely, yes.
What was your experience, Sherrod, when you were that age?
Oh, yeah.
Regarding siblings and stuff like that.
Yeah, and me and him shared that together as the middle child. And so my older brother was a high achiever. He was doing everything the right way. And here I was, quote unquote, the black sheep, you know. And so that comparison was a lot of pressure, trying to live up to fulfill the shoes of, I got to be the good son. But made a lot of forced decisions and decisions that really didn't have to make. But like you say, when you're in that situation where these expectations and standards are set so high, because my brother set the bar very high. I mean, He didn't get in a lot of trouble. He didn't hang out with the wrong people. I mean, he just did everything from a moral perspective. But me, on the other hand, with those challenges, and so it was definitely a challenge, man. It definitely caused me to have some dysfunctional, distorted thinking and perceptions. So I can definitely relate.
They call us the risk takers. They're like, Oh yeah, he's our risk taker. Another nice way of saying things. Well, what about you, Bruce?
Oh man, it's when Moses came down with the tablets. That's a long time ago. My siblings are 13 and 15 years older than I am.
Oh wow!
So I really didn't have that struggle because they were gone. But get the benefit of having siblings on paper and being an only child on the other end of it functionally. So, this kid here is pretty interesting because, you know, he was on the substance use side of this boarding school, but he refuses. You go to NA meetings because he had to do it to get out of the boarding school, but refuses to work a program. Refuses to do that. So I did some digging with the family and the parents, and it would appear that his using career might have lasted 2 weeks and 3 days. Therefore, he's not an alcoholic or an addict. He never, had a substance intake near an alcoholic or an addict. He engaged in the oppositional defiant and drug dealing type of stuff. And this guy, and I've been drug testing him for almost a year, clean, doesn't gravitate toward negative peers, doesn't, you know, not one desire to use, and has been clean. So this is a little bit different than the average bear that gets out of a facility.
Yeah.
So, okay. But we're going to be on now like a behavior management program or a cognitive stinking thinking management program or whatever to finish this kid out before he's able to leave the household. And so, you know, when somebody tells you they're not an addict, it's worth taking a look at it.
Right. You know?
And every now and again, I mean, this was a deep dive. School records, school officials, every family member. Nobody could ever recall him. No, I never saw him use anything. I never smelt anything. He just said he did. So we just took him as credit. But he went into the drug use side of the boarding school because it was easier and would have to do less psychological programming. Smooth move. Because everybody wants to be dramatic, you know. Oh, yeah, I was powerless over my behavior. Life become unmanageable, you know. There I was making these bad choices and thinking about it all the time. Yay! They're just, you know what I mean? He could say the right things, you know.
Yeah.
But to kind of keep in there, because the addiction programming field is so used to people trying to run from it and be in denial. But there is those people that run into it and have no business in it.
Well, they don't, and what they can, the mistake they can make, which happened here, is, I don't know that anyone made a mistake, but him choosing to do that is him running from something else.
Oh, yeah.
He found a cop-out, and he's a smart kid. I kind of wish I could meet him, because I know this, and he just like you said, smooth move, dude.
He is a 2007 Neil Williams. 2007.
Yeah.
Minus the druggies. But other than that, the demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
I'll kill you so much as I just look at you type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that you had that, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, he was talking about how I used to look so angry, which he's not wrong. I was pissed off. I always give, and it usually doesn't even matter if they are or not, and I already know it regarding the addict alcoholic behavior. if I start working with a young guy and he says he's not going to work a program, I let him have that opportunity, but I always try to make it, I make a deal with him. So, okay, well, we won't do it. But as soon as you have a lapse, go back to this and your way doesn't work, we're trying it my way. And absolutely, that's the deal. You do what you want, I'll let you go first. If your way is effective, then I'm on board, because that's really how I believe and operate. Whatever works, but here's our goal, and our goal involves sobriety. So you got to be able to do that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, had this coaching client we're talking about, had he had or a legitimate substance use disorder, we wouldn't be dealing with these problems. He'd be self-medicating. It'd be different. I don't want to wish that on anybody. But anyway, but because he's not that, and he's something else. But the gravity far exceeds weekly office visits and having someone like Sherrod go in there consistently and do the relational and thinking kind of work in tandem with my counseling, I think it's going to be a great synergism there. And so this is an example where, you know, counselor or psychologist could, or therapist could partner with a coach or a mentor and really augment the level of services that you're giving that client. So, and that family.
Yeah. I just took another one. I'm starting with a family in a low capacity, but this family's been working with a psychologist. And so she called me. I haven't told her I was going to talk about her, so I'm not going to mention who it is. But she called and she said, here's the position I'm in and I'm wearing too many hats. Do you think you could cover this aspect of it? Absolutely. And so this is not the first time I've worked with her, and she really likes the wraparound therapy with specific families, and it's worked really well. And I enjoy working with this doctor, and it can be really, really effective, because then you don't have to try and be more than what you need to be.
Yeah, because there's that, you know, an intensive outpatient program is going to focus more on the individual. The family services will still be truncated. Go into an inpatient thing, similar deal. It's all about the individual, but these issues that we're dealing with aren't substance use at all. They're more psychologically related, but not from a psychotic or clinically depressed perspective. Anxiety. So all your, you know, anxiety, depression, psychosis, that doesn't apply. Substance use, that doesn't apply. This leaves the person in no man's land, kind of.
Yeah. And you've got, especially with the coach, you're usually seeing your coach more than once a week, usually, not always, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so you have this continuous where they're meeting with somebody and they're getting the touch. And, you know, on this and this, and then a couple of days, then you hit this area. And so it's just like keeps it moving. It creates a real nice synergy.
And right here, right now, I'm going to go on record and say in-person coaching is what needs to be on a case like this. In-person, not telehealth. Look, if you have to do telehealth, telehealth is better than nothing. Absolutely. It's marvelous. But on a case that is challenging and multifaceted, you know, family systems issues playing on this one, being there, observing the client in their own native milieu, in their home, saying, man, that, you just don't get that in the office. So it's, man, I just just can't stress enough how important, one, that the coaching and mentoring is going to be, but two, the fact that it's in person and that it's live. Plus, it just, you know, with teenagers, I think you know, you need that. You need that for, you know, you want to build an alliance, but you want to build trust. You want to build respect. And a lot of that really is built in person. You can have some respect for somebody over the phone or like this and video, but man, you just.
Nothing like in person.
No, nothing compares to it. I agree.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with someone, like you say, that is a very articulate, he's a higher level thinker. So he's using more of a camouflage. You know, I can pick and choose the coat that I'm going to wear today that'll keep you thrown off. I'm not going to put on the original coat. So I can go over here in this lane. I can step in this lane. So you got to have some people that can really see that and observe that and call that out. And then just, you know, interact with them in a way that is healthy and productive. Because this young man has already set the precedent for a challenge. Well, I've met anybody then that can really help me. You know, I don't really have real problems. It's just, you know, my parents are the ones with the problems. My siblings are the ones with the problems. You know, I'm being denied, you know, to be a young man, to have a social life, to go to the traditional school, and I'm being punished. And then here in the other breath, he'll come back and just say, well, I can also see why my parents did what they did. So it's like, okay, which spectrum do you want to be on? You know, do you want to say, hey,
right.
You know? So, yeah, so it presents a challenge. But, you know, like you say, that in-person coaching and what we do yourself there, Mr. Neil, it's valuable. It's well needed.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And what's that?
I was going to say, there's elements of step work that are still valuable, even in a guy who's not working the steps, mm-hmm. in terms of, right, those are some unmanageabilities in his life, real or imagined. Anger, you know, the anger and resentment that this young man has is literally fueling his problems. And so,
and that's his DOC.
Right, right now, yeah, you know, for sure, that's his drug. And so, the anger and resentment, but then doing the stinking thinking or the cognitive behavioral challenge to those resentments.
Yeah.
And if those are fiction, then you've built a house of cards
mm-hmm.
on nothing but fiction. And then you got to be there to catch them when the house of cards falls down. So it's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, which is really important for people to understand about the 12 steps too. The purpose of the 12 steps is not to get you to stop drinking. Purpose of the 12 steps is to get you to live a recovered lifestyle, mm-hmm. you know, and you work on the root cause of all this behavior. I'm not drinking like an alcoholic just because I want to drink. It's I want to not feel, or I want to not think about, or I want to not deal with. And so I remember the first time, it was a couple years in a being in the program of AA, and I had this daily reading, and I was talking to my dad, and I was living out in West Texas. So when we would talk, we'd, you know, just share about what's going on. And so he asked me what I did every day, and I told him about this reading, and I asked him if he wanted to hear it. He said, yeah, it was like 2 pages. So I read it to him. And the first thing he said was, he was like, man, that's for everybody. That's not just for alcoholics. He was like, everybody needs to hear that. And I learned that more and more as I worked those steps, was like, this wouldn't even matter if I wasn't a drunk or a junkie. Like, I need to be doing this stuff, forgiveness, acceptance, you know, all these resentments, this anger. And like, it's all distraction from what we're really supposed to be doing and how we're really supposed to be living.
Right.
That's it.
Problems with living, right? You'll hear people say, I have problems with alcohol, but I also have problems with living.
Yes.
Living life on life's terms and all this and that. Man. And what a struggle that is when you're 17.
You're going and out. Your camera's frozen.
I know.
Are you still there?
There's lag. Yeah, I'm still here. It's just lagging for whatever reason.
Yeah, that I was just talking to someone about that last week, the living life on life's terms. And it's you don't always have to be excited about it, but we've got to learn to accept it, you know, and work with it. But I think as you do that more and more, it becomes easier to be happy about it rather than just like dragging your feet and sulking over it. But yeah, those emotional things, and especially at his age, because they can be powerful. It doesn't really matter what you're into. You're going to be passionate about it, you know, at that time in your life. And so if you're angry or pissed off, you're going to be fired up about it. And I don't know, it just seems like at that time in your life, you have so much energy that once you do get stuck on something, you're really stuck on it.
Yeah. They're five times more angry because of their age, you know. There's a big magnifying glass on all the feelings. And so whatever they're feeling, man, they're feeling it so powerful and so intense. We always kind of make fun of people in that first young love relationship, right? Puppy love, young love, and you're just so, right, enamored and punch drunk. And part of that is just your age and the chemicals and a lack of certain knowledge of things. So, and that's a dangerous combination when you have that. So for a lot of things. So anyway, but yeah, I think that's going to continue to be an exciting coaching, counseling, tandem case, moving forward. Another important aspect of this is work with the parents. And man, we could do show after show on our experiences working with different types of parents, right? But parents have to be very careful not to sabotage the recovery.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure everybody listening to this show right now who's worked in adolescent facilities nodding their head. Absolutely. And how many times were kids pulled out of treatment early when they didn't need to be? How many times were parents not necessarily making the best decision to aid in their child's recovery? So anyway, that's another challenge to this type of work, is dealing with the parents.
Yeah, I know personally I've had folks who were sabotaging, you know, the progress or the process, sabotaging it unknowingly. And then I've also had parents who wanted things to go their way. And so they did it. I don't think they were intentionally sabotaging the process, but they knew they were impacting it and redirecting the path. And I don't know that they realized how much of a problem that actually created. But in addition to that, I had a mother who I tried to help for some months. And the last conversation, but kind of the climax of that working relationship was I said, have you done these three things that we've been talking about for 2-3 months? And she said, no. I said, I've told you at least 3 times how important these things are to do, and you have not even tried to do one. And here we are, and you're asking me to do something else, and I'm telling you that nothing's going to work until these things are at least implemented or explored. Like, they could have very easily been the answer to a lot of the issues we were facing. And this parent, for whatever reason, I'm not sure. I still haven't figured that out. She just would not do them. And I still don't know if she has. I hope there were some really important resources, you know, like Al-Anon and another foundation. And just all these different tools that are very important, and the unwillingness of the parent to do them creates a big problem. And it's not creating a problem for me, it's creating a problem for her and her family. And, or it's not creating, it's, it, you get what I'm saying? Like, there could be answers here, but the parents not doing what they need to do, it makes it really challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's very important, that the parents understand we need you and you guys need to be on board. And that's part of my stipulation, that I have to work with you as well, because that way the client, the young man or the young lady, whoever you're working with, they know that we're all working in this together and I'm not on an island by myself. Because like you say, what good does it work individual? If that individual is changing and learning how to communicate better, learning how to listen and do things of that nature. But if the parents are still operating from their same original foundation of thought and behavior, we're still going to have a clash. I mean, it's still going to be a conflict. So it's definitely important. And I've challenged this family with some things, and I've met with them a couple of different times because they're realizing the importance and the seriousness of, you know, I do have to check myself. Be kind of like, you know, check yourself before you wreck yourself, you know. So, yes, Mr. Neal, it is very important, man, that we get these parents on board and be open, man. So,
yeah, and that's where, you know, we do there's a lot of work that's done when we're there as coaches and as a therapist and whatever role we play, there's a lot of work that's done. But the real work is when we leave and when they're back as a family, because that's where the stuff has to change. And so if they don't do their end, you know, it, yeah. Anyway, working with the family.
Oh, absolutely. Tell them to focus on the journey, not the destination.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Well, you know, my family, I think we struggled pretty heavily when I was, and this is when I was in my use and I was still a teenager. They didn't really know what to do. And that's a lot of the problem, is families who have no idea. They maybe didn't really worry about addiction or behavior like this because they thought, well, that's not an issue for us, you know? So, but then when it happens and you don't have any resources, you can all of a sudden be really, really lost. And that was our experience, as them trying to learn how to handle it while it's already happening. And you don't have a whole lot of time. You know, you may not have much time at all.
That's a good point. So, and again, some of the treatment centers or institutions, you know, they address family work to some extent, but some more than others. And let's face it, particularly with youth clients, they behave in the context of a larger family. And the family needs almost as much work as the client many times with these cases. And so the family gets lost in the process. Because if everything else is the same in the family when you go back, like, why wouldn't you relapse? I mean, it would be hard not to.
Yeah, you condition your environment, and your environment conditions you. I think Kathy and them over at Winning the Fight do a really good job of conveying that message to the public of how important the family is, and they really focus on education, and it's huge because, you know, Sherrod always says that the more you know, the more you grow, you know, and that. In this case, the more they know, the more prepared they are for the next situation, because it's not being pessimistic, you know, but you need to be realistic and you need to understand that these are realities, and to not prepare is to prepare for a bad situation, you know, And you simply shouldn't do that, especially when it's your kids involved and your family at stake. We all know how much more family means than anything else in the world. And this is one of those extra steps we can take, and taking care of them and loving them is educating ourselves and understanding how to handle stuff like this. I think we could do a better job of it as a community. We're getting better about it. I think, you know, not eliminating that stigma of your bad parents or this is a bad family because they have these issues going on. And it's just simply no, some families are affected and some are not. You know, consider yourself blessed if you're not, but don't pretend like you did something special because you didn't.
Yeah. And I think this pandemic has really forced a lot of families to come out of the closet and really have to reach out and get that help. Like you say, that stigma of, you know, I don't want my neighbors or I don't want people in society to know my dirty people. Well, this is not a secret. This is life. This is called the life process. We all go through a period of life where we are defiant or we think we know it all. So this is not a secret. This is what society presents when you're being born. So our phones should really be ringing off the hook now, because as we easing back into the pandemic being done and getting a little better handle and grip on it, you know, now here we are. Here's what we have. Here's what's been exposed. So what do we do with it?
Yeah, absolutely. The phones are definitely ringing more than they were a couple months ago, but I still think I agree with you. They should be ringing a lot more, but you know,
at least we're here. I said, at least we're here to do our part, you know, and kind of be available to as many clients as we can, you know, and kind of talk about these issues on the show and just encourage people to get the help they need, and also encourage people to think outside the box, you know, think outside the box with having a recovery coach, sober coach, or mentor alongside your existing services or service providers. You know, I think it augments things, and it can head off a possible admission or, you know, readmission back into a boarding school or IOP or hospital or, God forbid, jail. So, you know, having this add-on can really make the difference. I mean, I know it does for me. I mean, I know I do what I can do, and I know that I'm pretty good. I'm a journeyman, but man, just to have that extra help, man, can get the ball over the net in a really good way, and get the client to a better place so much quicker.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can make a lot of progress in a short amount of time when you get an extra person, especially when someone you know and trust and you know is going to do a great job. And we all know Sherrod's been doing this for a while and he's very good at what he does. So you know that he has that and he brings all those tools to the table.
Right.
So yeah, I imagine it creates a lot more room for focus for what you're doing, Bruce. You know, knowing that you have Sherrod taking care of that stuff on his end.
That's a good point. It really does take a little bit of pressure off me, and I can focus on more things that are relevant to the counseling lane or to the more mental health lane of things. And so, yeah, I think that is a good point. Another point I want to make is if you are doing that, make sure you have consent from your client to be able to talk to one another. Make sure you have parents, which I already did. And then obviously the parents are the stakeholders, as well the ones in charge of the child's treatment, certainly up to age 17. So make sure that you have those agreements in place so there's no trouble. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, yeah, that is a very important part, you know, like you say, because you want that individual, especially that young man or woman, you want them to have a voice. You know, you want them to be able to say, hey, this is about me, and I want to make sure that I have the right to say yeah or nay. And pretty much one of the things that I always present to them is, like you said earlier, Neil, you know, let me just be a part, let me just listen, and let me learn from you. You know, because a lot of times they don't think they're teaching us anything. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that I empower them with is, well, I'm learning just as much from you as you think you're learning from me. So this is a two-way street here. I mean, we're both teaching each other. And I think with this, especially in this specific case, when I let that young man know that, it kind of made him step back like, oh, really? I said, yes, sir, you're teaching me a lot. You know, and I think just saying those words to him kind of allowed him a little bit more willing to kind of engage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, just like you said, what it does for him, what I've learned is a lot of times when these guys are at that time in their life, a lot of things are being taken away from them. Like, you no longer have this privilege. You no longer are going to be in control of this. When you give something back to them, it's almost like you said, he's a little bit surprised and he kind of sat back. We're not used to that. We're like, well, wait a minute. You know, what's going on here? And I think that's important because they need to be shown that you're going to be willing to extend them some grace and you're giving them responsibility. You're entrusting them with something. And like you said, you're giving them a voice. You're letting them know, hey, well, you're running this too. You know, this is still your life. I'm not taking over completely. Like, I'm trying to help you with what you're doing, but it's still yours, you know? And so I never want to take that from them. I always want to let them have that because it's not my place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Another thing I want to add real quick is that when my job as a counselor is to ask questions and sometimes to provide, be more directive in my approach. When you have somebody that's a coach or a mentor, you don't necessarily have to have that type of direct approach. You can empower your client a little bit more as a coach or a mentor, right? They depending on the client, they can feel more in control. They can feel like they're at least directing a lot of the narrative. And sometimes, you know, look, I do that when I can. Sometimes I can't, you know.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw that out there because, you know, we always talk about that good coaches ask good questions and how with positive psychology, you know, traditional coaches are trained to be non-directive. You know, that's again a great ebony and ivory moment. You know what I'm saying? Just kidding. Sorry, man. It's a great
mix. You couldn't resist.
It's a great mix of directive and non-directive approaches to help your clients get to a better place. I mean, sure, I can't help myself when I'm around them to make some sort of a pun. Somebody's lives matter around here, but anyway, both of us. But anyhow, so something to think about, so I'm glad we had this chat today. So coming up on about 50 seconds. So Neil, how can folks reach us on social media and reach you?
Yeah, Sherrod, thanks for being on. And they can reach us at concierge_coaches on Instagram, the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. And folks can find me at Elevated Lifestyle Academy on all social media platforms.
How can they find you, Sherrod?
They can find me at NLFM at Texas.org.
NFLMTexas.org. Next Level Focus.
NLFM. Got it.
NLFM. And I can be found at conciergecoach.net. So, folks, have a great week and a blessed week. And we'll see you here next Monday on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. Have a blessed week.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.